You're listening to Privacy and Security Insights, brought to you by Picasso. Hello, and welcome to this podcast brought to you by Picasso. I'm Steve Wright, today's host for this session. I am delighted to be welcoming Carolyn Hubble, the Legal Director and Director of FOI Freedom of Information and Prosecutions at the ICO. And today we are very privileged for her to talk to us about criminal prosecutions at ICO. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Delighted. Absolutely delighted. So before we begin, you've spent a bit of time. So just for our listeners, can you just contextualize 30 seconds of your history of what's brought you up to date?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Carolyn Hubble, as you've said. I'm one of the legal directors here at the ICO with responsibility for criminal prosecutions and Freedom of Information Act appeals. I come from a criminal law background myself, with over 20 years working in criminal defence, from being a paralegal to a solicitor, and then as a solicitor advocate representing people in the Crown Court. I've been with the ICO for 5 years. I came in as a prosecuting lawyer and then I became a legal director 2 years ago.
Thank you. Wow. What fantastic credentials. So what's interesting in your 20-year history, you must have seen the good and bad of society.
You could put it that way. It's certainly been an eye-opener.
Yes.
All walks of life, all kinds of offending. I worked in general crime. So it was everything from road traffic offences in my early days as a solicitor right through to sort of robbery, rape, murder, etc. in my latter years. So I didn't come from a specific privacy background in law, but this is where I've ended up.
Yeah, this is, and we all come on these journeys, as we were talking prior to the podcast started.
Absolutely.
Strange travels along the way. But this, well, welcome to this Picasso podcast. So my first question is, so criminal prosecutions in the data protection arena aren't widely discussed compared to fines. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think it's fair to say that historically, criminal prosecutions have formed a small part of the ICO's work. And certainly the main sort of offending we used to prosecute most frequently was relatively low level. For example, nosy employees looking at data that they shouldn't be. So the impact was often confined to the controller and a small pool of data subjects. And yes, we did have some more serious examples of offending, notably where there'd been financial gain to the offender. But I wouldn't say those were our bread and butter work. And in light of that, I guess there was a limit to how much our work was ever publicised or discussed externally. We were also a very small team here at the ICO. There was a limit to how much we could prosecute. When I arrived, there was only one other prosecutor. Happily, we have now grown and we have five full-time lawyers and a paralegal working exclusively in prosecutions. So our capacity and capability to prosecute more serious cases has certainly increased. And that should help in turn elevate the profile of our work. Well, I hope so anyway.
Well, certainly. Yes, that certainly will. And no, that's interesting, isn't it? Because that evolution of those types of cases would very much sort of chime with what we're witnessing, not just here in the UK, but obviously in mainland Europe and across the seas. So I just want to dive into the why these things are happening. So we all know we're seeing this increase in data being unlawfully accessed, as we know, and then sold on the black market. But what do you think is driving this trend, and how serious a problem is this?
Well, the increase is probably born out of the fact that word has simply got out that there is serious money to be made out of the data trade. The sums we've seen being made by defendants has been eye-watering at times, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds, usually out of trading in road traffic accident data used to try and generate PI claims. For example, customer data stolen from vehicle hire companies, breakdown companies, insurance companies, those sort of organisations. And we've seen from evidence gathered how defendants work together, how they encourage each other to jump on the bandwagon, and how they even proactively recruit or embed people into organisations to pass them data in return for money. And often those recruited are young, easy to exploit, and on a modest wage. So the lure of an extra income is irresistible. And for those who are so minded to bend the rules and break the law, it's of course easier and safer to do it with a commodity like data, because you can trade in it under a veneer of respectability, and you don't have to get your hands as dirty or mix with the more salubrious side of the criminal underworld as you would with drugs or stolen goods. And it's easier to feign ignorance if you're challenged about its legality than it is to with a kilo of heroin.
Yes, great example. Thanks, Caroline. So we know data is now seen as a very valuable commodity. There are black markets. There are sort of whole underground of websites that most people don't know about, though you can actually trade this data for a price. So I liked your analogy of the stolen goods, drugs, etc. You alluded to how criminals are exploiting this. So what would you say were the biggest risks for organizations that are tuning in to listen today? And just briefly us as individuals, because it's pretty scary.
It certainly can be. Well, in terms of risks posed to businesses, well, it can have a massive impact on their reputation and in client customer confidence. Naturally, customers lose faith in the company if they feel their data hasn't been held securely enough to prevent abuse of it. And the ability of organisations to store and utilise public data safely is imperative to their trade and customer confidence. And the level of offending we're talking about often involves hundreds and thousands of data subjects losing control of their data. And for those that become aware because they are subjected to multiple cold calls, for example, they will no doubt blame the organisation for not protecting their data. And then word can get round that using that organisation can result in your privacy being compromised. The financial impact on the businesses is not only loss of future custom or current custom, but also the cost and effort of remedial measures they have to take. So we had one controller company, for example, who had to get in external specialists to examine their systems and help increase security. They also had to hold 20 separate meetings with corporate clients to try and reassure them. And they estimated the financial cost at around £400,000, not including loss of future custom. In terms of the impact on individuals, I guess it's that loss of control over their data and the inherent feeling of insecurity that can trigger, as well as the loss of confidence in using respected organisations in the future. And also cold calling can become a real nuisance at best. We've all experienced that, but it can be worse than that. We found in evidence how it can become aggressive and intimidating in offenders' efforts to secure claims. We've heard callers offer to bring paperwork to someone's address to secure a claim, pointing out, because I know where you live. And we've heard people really lose their temper with callers due to the incessant nature of the calls. So I don't think we can underestimate the negative impact on people.
Quite. No, that's horrendous. So just in terms of the kind of legal framework and the challenges of enforcement that you faced into, obviously there are many offences that under the DPA 2018 that result in fines. We've seen that. It's easy to find. But the ICO has often used the Computer Misuse Act, which is, as we were reminiscing before this call, about how the internet has grown and the capability and technology has grown. So we're using this rather sort of what would, on the face of it, be slightly outdated piece of legislation to secure prison sentences. Why is that necessary? And how effective is that as a tool for you to secure certain prosecutions?
Well, as we were seeing examples of more sophisticated offending and evidence of significant financial gain to offenders, we realised a financial penalty just didn't always meet the gravity of the offending. Right. So that's when we looked beyond the DPA for an offence which would open up sentencing options wider for the court. And there is a natural crossover between Section 1 of the CMA and Section 170 of the DPA, because both involve accessing data without authorization or consent. The former just happens to specifically involve the use of a computer, which in this day and age is often the case. The CMA offence carries a maximum penalty of up to 2 years imprisonment. So it opens up the whole range of sentencing options for a judge, from a financial penalty, if that is deemed sufficient, to a community order, if deemed serious enough to warrant it, and ultimately immediate imprisonment or suspended sentence of imprisonment if a court deems the offending so serious that only imprisonment would suffice. So if we can link the offender to the actual access via a computer, then it opens up that possibility of prosecuting under the CMA if appropriate and proportionate. The case where the ICO first chose to do that involved a defendant who was an employee of a national accident repair company who accessed the data of over 17,000 customers without a business need. And that led to over 100 customers complaining about cold calls. Given that sheer number of records accessed, the fact that this was a serious breach of trust placed in him by his employers, and the fact that his motive was clearly financial, it was decided to prosecute for an offence carrying a higher penalty. And we did. And he received 6 months imprisonment. Since then, we've prosecuted five other defendants under the CMA, all of whom received suspended sentences of imprisonment. And we're in the process at the moment of prosecuting another eight in one case and five in another under the CMA, which are going through the courts as we speak. Those impactive sentences which the court have handed out so far have been very gratifying because they show that the courts are taking data-related offending seriously. They're basically saying the offending is so serious that a custodial sentence is warranted, even if the sentence is then suspended off the back of the person's personal mitigation. And that's really ratified our decision to utilise that legislation. In terms of effectiveness, we can but hope that that acts as a deterrent to other offenders. We've come across evidence in text messages between offenders where they've been laughing about how they can only get a fine if caught. So it's really important the message gets out that they could actually go to prison for what they're doing.
Absolutely. No, quite right. And thank you. That's a good explanation. So just in terms of beyond fines and potential imprisonment, are there other enforcement tools like confiscation order under the Proceeds of Crime Act? Are they as effective in deterring those offenders? Are they putting people off? What's the status do you see out there at the moment?
Well, I think being able to apply for confiscation orders under POCA is absolutely crucial, not only to try and recoup the financial benefits of a defendant's offending, but also from my own experience in private defence practice, it's fair to say many offenders are more concerned with what POCA order they may get hit with than with the actual sentence they may be facing. I'll take prison on the chin, like an occupational hazard for some.
Right.
But they're absolutely outraged at the prospect of having to pay over any money or having to sell an asset they've bought with their ill-gotten gains. So our ability to apply for confiscation is a really important string to our bow. We've secured three POCA orders to date and we're in the midst of POCA proceedings in two other cases at the moment. So it's a really important part of our work.
Do you know, I hadn't considered that, but they're so concerned with protecting their assets. So,
that's what it's all about.
No, great. Thank you. So just lastly, because we're rapidly running out of time, as usual, the future then of data crime enforcement. So would you say that the current laws are keeping up with the sophistication, the complexity of these, especially with AI, crimes, or do we need perhaps the case for stronger legal reforms, or is that something that's even being thought about at the moment?
With the CMA being 35 years old now, which is amazing, because I'm pretty sure 1990 was only 20 years ago, but never mind. But obviously technology has advanced exponentially in that time, as has tech-related offending. We actually fed into a call for information actually in 2023 by the Conservative government on the need to overhaul that legislation, which included a look at the sufficiency of the sentencing powers. We think there's an argument that the maximum sentence of 2 years, for example, for a Section 1 offence does need to be increased to match the scale and sophistication of offending we're now seeing. I know the present government indicated in late 2024 that they are committed to ensuring the CMA remains up to date and gives law enforcement the tools and powers they need. Apparently, officials are scoping out several areas of legislative reform. So I guess watch this space for their proposals. We certainly are.
Yes, no doubt. And finally, then, just kind of looking ahead, how is the ICO planning to tackle organised data crime more effectively? You kind of alluded to it, that there's protocols and there's organisation happening. What message would you want to send to businesses and obviously potential offenders to deter them? But what, in terms of organised crime, sorry, there's three questions in that, but tackling organised crime more effectively, how is the ICO doing that?
As I explained earlier, we've grown now. We're still not a huge prosecuting outfit, of course. We don't have the resources of the CPS and other regulators, but we will prioritise offending, which involves the most harm to data subjects and controllers and the greatest gain to offenders. Mm-hmm. I guess in terms of what message we want to send to businesses and potential offenders, well, to offenders, you can stop laughing because you won't necessarily just face a fine for what you're up to. And we will try and hit you where it really hurts in the pocket if we can. To businesses, we will support you through prosecuting rogue employees, not least to enable you to use that as an important deterrent message to other employees and to reassure your customers. And then finally, I guess a message to data subjects generally as well, where we can, we will use what teeth is available to punish those who threaten your right to data privacy, to demonstrate that we are an effective regulator who cares about your right to retain control over your information, which may sound like a bit of a sassy soundbite to end on, but we absolutely do, because privacy and control are paramount to all of us.
Caroline Harbel, Legal Director, Director for FOIA and Prosecutions, thank you for joining us here for this podcast at Picasso. Really great insights there. If you are a subscriber, please click below and sign up to receive our regular updates and newsletters. Also, if you want to get involved, please click on the community website. Please do get involved. We'd welcome more of you. We want to hear more fantastic insights from you. And just down to me to thank Carolyn for joining us today. And well, we now have a lovely weekend to look forward to. But thank you. I look forward to speaking to you again in the future. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.